second inning by Tom. Let's see if I screwed up the computer here. Stall for me, would you, Jacob? Say something entertaining and informative at the same time.
Oh, no, that's all right. You see the special.
They had it coming.
They had it coming. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Woke up this morning and said, what's God have in store for me today?
Yeah. Did he answer?
Yeah, you know what he said? You got Hannah Scott right off the top. That's the devil. Hold on, this is Hannah Scott.
Not right.
God said, here comes Hannah.
What was that?
That was the leftover of Tom listening.
My walk.
You're caught in the draft of Tom's music.
That's
okay.
All right.
That's all right.
So 42.7% of people showed up at the polls in Snohomish County had a chance to vote, and one of the people they voted for was the sheriff, right?
Snohomish County Sheriff, yes.
We covered this because there was two guys. There was the older guy that had been in there, younger guy came in, and the older guy said, listen, we're going to do this and that. And he seemed to be sort of a bit more flexible when it came to crime, when it is sort of generally not only with the homeless, but overall.
You can't arrest your way out of this problem. That's what Sheriff Tri-Ternary would always
say.
Right,
and you would, if you were in Snohomish, those, you had a clear distinction between the one guy that seemed to be tough on crime, tough on criminals, and sympathetic to police, and then you had the other guy saying, listen, let's just cooler heads prevail on this. Let's not be so aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, and Sheriff Ternary had instituted a lot of policies that Sheriff Fortney, who's the new sheriff, is keeping some of them as he takes over.
Okay.
But is diversion programs, medication-assisted treatment in the jails, and various things like that. And he had a policy for some time where they were turning away people who were addicted to drugs and high on drugs at the jail for lower-level crimes, shoplifting, car piles, things like that, because Snohomish County had a big problem with people dying in their jail for a long time. That was a whole DOJ investigation, and they were like, we got to do something. So that's how that all started. But
I start with this to give you an opportunity, sort of the background of how the politics have changed in Snohomish.
Yes.
Okay.
So now a tough on crime sheriff, Adam Fortney, took over. And he's been in office now just a few weeks, and one of his first actions was to unfire a deputy that Sheriff Ternary fired on his way out the door. Now, this goes back to a story I've covered in depth for some time now. Over this last year in June, the family of this man, this 24-year-old Edmonds man who was killed by this deputy, had filed a federal lawsuit that was settled. What happened was back in October 2018, 24-year-old Nicholas Peters and his girlfriend were in a truck. They were driving, and this deputy, Art Wallen, saw them and was going to another call. He reversed course and started to follow them. They were driving erratically, he said, and at some point got to speeds over 100 miles an hour. So there was a chase. More deputies called to take part in that chase. They did the pit maneuver, tried to stop him a couple times. Both of those times, Nicholas Peters rammed the deputy's vehicles. In the end, they get him stopped over near Bothell. The truck is kind of pinned up against a tree. The one cop jumps on the hood of the truck. Another deputy, Wallen, who was the fire deputy, came around to the side. There's audio and internal investigation, so there was conflicting commands. Put your hands up, turn off the engine, both coming at the same time. The kid who was killed, his girlfriend was in the car, said her version of what happened differs from what the deputy ended up saying. In the end, after an internal investigation, Sheriff Tri-Ternary said this was not in policy, both because of the pursuit, because it was considered reckless driving. There was no call for DUI, and that's against department policy, and that the shooting was excessive force. It was not within the use of force policy of the department because there was no imminent danger. Now, Sheriff Fortney says he doesn't disagree with any of the evidence. What he disagrees with is Sheriff Trenary's interpretation of that, and after he reviewed all of these 900 pages of the files, he feels that this was reasonable, so that's why he gave him his job back.
I know there's probably the angle that I'm standing up here, and I was his boss that night, and I was with him that night, that there may be some favoritism. I want everybody that can hear this message, including the media in the room, that if I felt it was in the best interest of the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office and the Snohomish County citizens in general to keep Arthur Wallen in a terminated status, and there was some reasoning for that, I absolutely would have done it.
But he says absolutely not. And what he points to here is the deputy Snohomish County prosecutor, Adam Cornell, when he looked at this case, he found this shooting justified. Again, this happened in 2018. Mm-hmm. That is pre I-940 when you did not have to prove malice in when you had to prove an officer acted with malice mm-hmm. in order to prosecute them for you know use of force kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's all that went into Adam Cornell's decision. That's just what the situation was at the time. But you know, Fortney says it's certainly he acknowledges it's different internal review and criminal review.
I will acknowledge and I agree. Criminal charging is different than internal policy. You cannot charge in a criminal case and still have an internal policy violation, okay? But his letter choosing not to charge Wallen with any criminal charges whatsoever was, in my opinion, much more than that. It was very supportive. He basically said a reasonable person would find Wallen's actions, that his decisions that night were reasonable, okay? So I'm, instead of agreeing with the former sheriff who didn't think it was reasonable, I'm agreeing with the prosecutor. I'm thinking, with what the situation he was put in that night, I find his actions reasonable.
And he kind of encouraged everyone to read all 900 pages of the investigation, which is all public now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, stands by his decision.
Well, so did I mean there are a lot. This bothers me. I mean, I think it's sort of like an endorsement for lawlessness in Snohomish County. However, this was an issue during the campaign. He ran on this and he won. So I think it's voter endorsed lawlessness. If you happen to see it, you know, the way
but
I did.
Did he actually say, Tom, did he say, by the way, if you elect me, I'm going to review this case?
Yes, I mean, this was one of the
issues he said
that
he was going to review
yes.
the case.
Okay. And he was endorsed by the guy that he's now reinstated. Now, I'm not suggesting that, he did that. It was a quid pro quo kind of business. Uh-huh. I think the reason Fortney's doing this, the new sheriff's doing this, is because he was the guy in charge. He was called on the carpet for just, listen, you, the now new sheriff, but at the time, just, you know, the...
Sheriff Trenary.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about Fortney, the guy who was just in charge of the case when he ran. He was told, he was reprimanded in effect, reprimand yes. might be unofficial, mm-hmm. for not calling off the chase.
Yep.
You cannot, this guy's driving 100 miles an hour. You should not keep, that pursuit is not worth it because he
right.
wasn't a drunk driver. So then he is now justifying his own behavior by saying, well, yeah, I allowed this guy to, you know, to break the Department of Laws. And if I condemn that guy, then that makes me look bad. I think it's easy to see Fortney just, in effect, you know, justifying himself mm-hmm. by saying what Wallen did was, you know, did not violate policy, even though the decision, the department had decided that he had broken departmental policy, yes. and the county settled for $1 million.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did last Friday. They settled that actually on the same day that Deputy Wallen was reinstated, as a matter of fact. Yeah. I will tell you this. I interviewed Adam Fortney prior to the election. This was brought up. He, at the time, felt that Sheriff Trenary had, there was some retaliation for his running against the sheriff. That included the firing of this deputy, which mm-hmm. came this last mm-hmm. October, right before the election. That was something he kind of put out there right before Election Day, that he felt that that was the case. And that is when he said he would review this should he win.
Yep. As Tom said, as he summed it all up this morning, elections have consequences.
That's right.
Well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this case, not for the betterment.
Well, that according to you.
According
so
to
if
me,
you were
no,
to run
yeah,
in Snohomish, you would lose as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, so Sheriff Fortney, this is what he kind of explained. He goes, fine, you know, DUI wasn't mentioned in this chase. I asked him, was this reckless driving? Because that was the big point that Sheriff Trenary said specifically,
yeah.
that reckless driving does not allow for a pursuit
yes.
in policy. And Sheriff Fortney said yesterday, look, this guy said over the radio, if we don't stop this guy, he's going to kill somebody. So that, he said, it's just kind of, you know, inner cop talk. We know uh-huh. we, so that's yeah. why he made the decision to let that chase go. That was his position all the time, up to and including back when he had his own discipline for allowing that chase to continue.
Uh-huh.
So that's his position.
Okay.
He also has the position that there was an imminent threat because that truck, he said, was used to hit the patrol calls multiple times.
Okay, one last thing I
yes.
want to throw.
Yes, yes.
He claims there was no evidence the guy had a gun, but he claims that he had a spidey sense
yes.
that he had a gun, which justified the shooting and everything else.
And that, yeah, Sheriff Fortney, Sheriff Trenary in his firing.
Spidey senses are real.
And they might be real, right. but they do not justify
handle.
A shooting.
Yes.
And that is the exact
yes,
words
problem,
of Sheriff
yeah.
Trenary, now former
and
Sheriff
he's had
Trenary.
A few disciplinary issues.
Classic example of adrenaline is flying. You're going 100 miles an hour. They pinned him in at one place.
Yeah.
He backed up. He smashed yeah. in the car, backed up, and took back off again. And,
look,
you know,
you guys have been around as long as me. So back in the day, right, the 80s, the 90s, when you're having a car chase like this, and then the vehicle is the deadly weapon,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, this is a shooting 9 times out of 10,
yes.
if not all 10, back in the 80s and the 90s. Nowadays, and especially in this state with the passage of I-940 and de-escalation and all of this new training that's about to get underway, mm-hmm. I don't think that this necessarily falls under that. But again, this happened back in 2018.
Here's a weird thing. The one guy's got the spidey sense of the gun. The other guy must have his spidey senses turned off. Because why do you jump on the hood of a car?
That's not de-escalation.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, thank you.
You're very welcome. Anyway, the deputy gets his job back with back pay, by the way.
Thank you, Hannah. There we go. Okay, the Senate adopts the ground rules. They didn't get anybody to go with them. They were hoping to peel off, I think, Romney, Collins, and Murkowski. They didn't get any of those.
Yet.
They all voted they're going to do the same thing they did during the Clinton impeachment, which is present everything, and then we'll vote as to whether or not we want to be able to have witnesses come in place.
That's right. The biggest movement happened moments before this thing kicked off. That there was dissension among the Republicans, the four or five Republicans that Democrats are hoping to peel off, as you mentioned. They did object to the plan to ramrod this through in just 24 hours, two 12-hour periods. They got the 3 days as opposed to 2 days.
Yeah.
And they also got McConnell to admit to just accept the evidence from the House. Initially, it was going to be put up to a vote.
Yes.
They asked Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is one of the four or five or six senators that are, you know, weighing whether they should vote for witnesses. And he says, I think there should be witnesses. I think at least we should hear from John Bolton. But I am willing to go along and vote after we hear the initial salvos on that. So that'll be the big issue is when after they hear these. So you've got 3 days of Democrats and then 3 days of Republicans. Then they'll bring it up to a vote.
Lots of outrage.
But even then, John.
Yes.
John. Even then, if they agree and the senators say, yes, we side with the Democrats, we want to have witnesses, and let's call John Bolton if nobody else, there's a good chance that John Bolton will never see the light of day in the Senate trial because that'll immediately, executive privilege will be invoked by the White House, and that would be a court case, and that could delay it for weeks, if not months.
Well,
and
that's why he may never
testify anyway.
Right. Well, the House could have subpoenaed him. They could have done subpoenas, and then it would have gone to trial, and then it would have gone to the Supreme Court, and would have taken a long time.
That's right.
So they ramrodded it through in the House.
Ramrod. They just didn't want to wait because it's up to the Senate.
All right, I'll wait for you to finish. So they ramrod it through in the House in order because they have to do it so quickly. They could have had the witnesses in the House. Then they get to the Senate and they say, okay, now you have to call witnesses. Well, they didn't call them there in the House because they didn't want to wait. So they have it in the Senate. I think if Chuck Schumer hadn't gotten up and screamed and yelled, he might have done better of getting Romney with him and basically just vote on it.
Oh, I think he has Romney with him.
It doesn't have Romney. He didn't get Romney's vote on the witnesses.
No. On this issue, they're going to take the vote on the witnesses after the testimony.
Present everything.
Yes.
And Romney kept saying, just do it like we did Clinton. We'll just present everything, and then we'll bring witnesses in. They never brought Monica Lewinsky in, by the way.
They did, though. I heard that they did.
On the Senate?
Yeah, for the Senate stuff, they allowed for three witnesses after the House didn't have them as witnesses.
Yeah. So you'll get Bolton, and then Bolton will go plead the fifth or take executive privilege.
No, but Bolton wants to testify. No, it's the White House that's stopping him from testifying by claiming executive privilege.
Right. And then you're going to get Hunter Biden and Joe Biden will sit there as well.
Well, maybe. In fact, that was the one thing last night. They said that Ted Cruz is trying to negotiate. If we give you Bolton, will you give us Biden? Hunter.
Got
or
it.
Joe.
I had seen somebody else said the exact same thing yesterday, which was in the Wall Street Journal. We talked about on the show that this whole thing is just a play to get the Senate. In fact, I think it was it was Nadler said, the people of America are judging the president and the people of America are judging the Senate. Mm-hmm. So they're going to say is they don't really want witnesses. They want to be able to say the whole thing was a cover up. This thing was a sham. The whole thing is that no one got all the information. And that's the Senate's fault because they want to get control of the Senate. They know that they can't beat Trump with the ding dongs they've got running right now. They say, well, what we'll do is we'll take the Senate. And what we want to be able to do is block him from getting all of those judges in place, because that's the thing that will linger for a long time after Donald Trump dies of a massive heart attack. It's all of those judges that are sitting in there that the Senate can't stand, that they are just blasting through with Mitch McConnell. So
but that's
they
not
want
just
to get the
what they want. If they could get this impeachment and removal like 51% of the country apparently wants, they'd prefer that. But as a backup, if nothing else, if the Senate looks like they're obstructing, in fact, one of the arguments that the Republican senators, and it wasn't just those four or five, even Rob Portman, a lot of mainstream Republicans are saying, if we ram this through in 2 days instead of giving him 3 days, it's going to look like we don't want to hear the evidence. That is going to hurt us. They're concerned about their own election results as well. And so because of that, that's kind of like the secondary backdrop.
They want the Senate, because then they can control. Then you can have Ruth Bader Ginsburg can leave. Of course they'd rather have that, but they don't have anybody to win the presidency. So they get the Senate, they keep the House, they'll pick up a few more seats in the House, they win the Senate, then they can get in there, Ruth Bader Ginsburg can retire, and then they can start to pack the courts their way or block Trump on just about everything to the point where he is just completely neutered for the next 4 years.
Well, usually a second term, that happens anyway, you know, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
He was, you know, trying to transform America. I mean, that was Obama. Obama wanted to transform America. The senators, by the way, are not allowed to have their phones. They're not allowed to have coffee. They can't have an iPad. They can have an Apple Watch. I think one or two of them have that. And they do go out, and they are able to get only a few things there on the floor of the great deliberative body, Tom. What are they allowed to get?
Candy.
Right, they go to the candy table.
Because I have a sweet tooth myself. I'm glad they make concessions. I can do without coffee if I've got candy. And there is a candy desk. A designated senator has a candy desk. For some reason, Pennsylvania runs the candy desk. Way back in 1999, when it was Clinton who was up for impeachment, rather than Trump, Rick Santorum, the great or not so great senator from Pennsylvania, ruled the roost. And now it's Pat Toomey, also from Pennsylvania. And why Pennsylvania? Hershey's is based. So everything that's Pennsylvania based candy is now at his desk. And you can, anybody, he says this is the one bipartisan thing in this Senate chambers. Anybody, an independent, a Democrat, or
can
Republican,
go get a candy.
Can go over, they don't even have to ask permission. He doesn't even have to be there. They can just go in and open his desk and take something.
Some of the senators have described it as torture, not the candy necessarily, but sitting there. And one guy falls asleep. And the young senator that I saw interviewed in the Wall Street Journal, he said, I don't like the fact that I don't really have any power, but I like the fact that I'm out of the C-SPAN camera shot. So he's way in the back, not allowed to talk. And the one guy that fell asleep and somebody got a picture of him, his aide immediately said, no. When he's really concentrating on something, he will often close his eyes. It's him listening intently. By the way, here is
Chief Justice tipped it off, though.
Here's Chief Justice Roberts saying, listen, let's not get all angry here.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers.
He's about to use a word, Tom, and you're going to have to. You already know what the word is?
I heard it, unfortunately.
And the president's counsel in equal terms.
No, stop, pusillanimous. Hold on.
To remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging.
Your word, Andrew, is pettifogging. Pettifogging. Your word is pettifogging. I need you to say the word, spell the word, and say the word again. Pettifogging.
Pettifogging. Pettifogging. Pettifogging.
Unfortunately incorrect. It is an I instead of a Y. Pettifogging.
Yes. This is why I don't do spelling bees.
You could have asked for the word to be used in a sentence, and then Tom would have done that for you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have helped me spell it differently anyway.
That just gives you a chance to stall. Origins of the word? Use the word in a sentence, Tom.
John is the master of pettifoggery on the Tom and Curly Show.
You guys suck.
That's right. It has to do with the truth.
You can't say that on the Senate floor, John.
No, you're allowed, John. We'll take a quick break. Come back. Tom and Curly right here at Cairo Radio. Let me see. It's called a tease. Hang on. Just stick around. Seconds they start to sing on this song. That's the post on it. Keel Mortgage, Laura Keel's got a great team working for her there at Keel Mortgage. They can't wait to help you. Want to refinance the house? It's Keel Mortgage, or perhaps you have served this great country. Thank you very much for that. VA loans, find out more about that. They are the experts in everything having to do with anything having to do with your mortgage. It's Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL, keelmortgage.com. Okay. Let's see. 2010 was supposed to be the time that the e-book revolution would just sweep across the country and everybody would be reading all novels. Everything would be right there on your little e-reader.
And not only that, the price, which was only $9.99 to get a full blank, you know, a full length novel,
just $9.99,
would be even less.
Even less than $9.99.
Cheaper and cheaper. Everyone would be reading the death of the physical book. Mm-hmm. Was there for all to see. And yet, a decade later, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Fox has a really in-depth and fascinating article about the way e-books have revolutionized and not revolutionized the publishing industry. Let's just start off with the notion that, first off, why did everything get so cheap? Well, in 2007, when it seemed like it was going to be the revolution, Amazon introduced its Kindle.
Yes.
Its Kindle allowed you to read books. You could carry 100 books on that. And they realized that in order to convince people to spend $399 on a Kindle, mm-hmm. you had to, what's the benefit from that? Well, you can get books dirt cheap. They said everything on, you can get every book that you want through Amazon for $9.99. Mm-hmm. And that will justify all these, because normally a hardback books are like
20
$26
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
So everything went $9.99. The publishers were thrilled. Hey, great. Amazon's on board. They're going to push this e-book industry. By 2009, 2 years later, they said they had a change of plans, and they realized, or a change of thought, according to the publishers, this turned out to be an existential threat. They realized that e-books are only $2 cheaper than hardbacks are to produce.
Yes.
So they should be charging like $18.99, not $9.99. And they realize we have no control over this. We sell these books wholesale to Amazon, and Amazon can sell them for like 5 cents if they want to. Mm-hmm. Because for Amazon, it was a loss leader to get people to buy their Kindle and to further their monopoly control.
Which is normally the reverse of those things. They sell you the hardware, right? They give you the razor, they sell you the blades. They give you the thing almost for free, and knowing that you'll just continue to upload. That's why, you know, the iPod and stuff like that. I remember I told you the story in 1996 or 7, my brother got in from a run. My dad was sitting on the couch. My brother had this thing on his arm. My dad said, "What's that? Is that for your heart rate?" He goes, "No, I listen to music on that." Well, how's it work? And she explained it to him. My father said 2 days later, he went and had about Apple stock.
Yeah.
That's the whole, when he died, that's all he had left was all of that Apple stock, knowing that you give her the razor, sell you the blades. In this case, Amazon was charging how much for the reader? Or no, was it Amazon wasn't the first with the reader, was it?
Yeah. Amazon had the Kindle. And they said, you can buy a book for $9.99. The Kindle cost $399, but over the course of a decade, they were dominating the market because there was nobody else selling books that cheaply. So then it's funny, you mentioned Apple. Apple then came in and says, you know what? We've got something called the iPad, and you can read books on the iPad.
Yeah.
And they went to the publishers and said, we're going to try to set up like an iTunes library where you can get access to books. And they went to, there were the big six publishers, and five of the six publishers agreed with Amazon. They said, agreed with Apple. And they said, yes, Apple said, we'll make every book available for $14.99. That's $5 more than they would get from Amazon.
Yeah.
And they agreed, and they said, okay, but in order for us to hold to that, you got to make sure you don't sell your book to Amazon to let them undercut us by $5.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, fine, we won't give our books to Amazon. Well, they saw that as the only way that they could fight Amazon's monopoly was to create the sort of publisher's monopoly of the five of them. And then they were accused by the Department of Justice of collusion.
Yeah.
You cannot collude on a price. And they actually lost the case. Amazon won that case, or Apple lost that case. And what they called the agency model was declared illegal.
Yeah.
But the sanctions wore out. They had to pay $166,000. After a few years, the sanctions went away. And now they say the operating model is the agency model, which means that publishers refuse to give Amazon complete control. They don't wholesale it to Amazon. They allow publishers to dictate through Apple, and that's why you can't get books as cheap. Right now, there are some ebooks that are more expensive than the actual hardback.
There's two things that worked against it. One was the reading experience. Most readers found it to be unpleasant. The light and eye strain, they didn't like the size of it. They didn't like to carry it around with them. Maybe on a plane or something like that, they'd be okay with it. Plus, also, there is the ego element. And for that, we asked Jacob, who wants to read a book, wants it to be a paperback or a hardback, and would like people to be able to see the book that he is reading or the book that is on his bookshelf.
Yes, when people come over, it's very frustrating if what I'm reading that I do think that presents myself as an intellectual person is just on the Kindle, because then I have to, like, oh, I don't know, open up the Kindle and show them the screen and scroll through, like, look, oh, how much I've read. Yeah. But if it's just on a bookshelf and they can peruse it themselves, then they can know how smart I am.
E-books are lousy status symbols.
Exactly.
That's hilarious. I think that's really funny, because people that I know, a lot of people don't even have bookshelves in their houses anymore. They think it's old school, but
yeah,
it's, I love walking into a house.
Oh, you can tell so much about somebody.
Look at what's on their bookshelf and all this. So
that's a great conversation starter. If you ever go to somebody's house, you don't know them very well, mm-hmm. and you've been dragged over there because of your spouse, you go over there and you just say, wow, so what was that book like, or this, that?
Yes.
And they lay it all out. You really can tell who the person is, the kind of stuff they read. Friend of mine had no idea about The Shades of Grey.
Okay, yeah.
She's from the Netherlands.
Okay.
Somebody had recommended, get this book.
Uh-huh.
So she's sitting on a plane, sitting in first class, because she was traveling with a fairly sophisticated computer company.
No,
and
just
she's
rich.
Sitting there. She's got the head. She's got the hardback. Yeah. And people are walking by looking at her. And she's like, why are they looking? Everybody's looking at her, right?
Yeah.
And she's there, and she's just reading. She goes, I get to about like the 30th page.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. She goes, I felt like going to the front of the plane and saying to the flight attendant, can I just make a quick announcement over the PA that I had no idea what was in this book? She said there was not a woman that went by that did not see, because it was a big covered book.
Yeah.
And everybody knew it at that point, right?
Yeah.
The cover.
Oh, yeah. It was a cultural phenomenon for a while. But that is, you know, you're high end, cheap. When you're reading a hardback version of Shades of Grey.
That's chic?
Cheap.
Oh, cheap.
High-end cheap, because they're cheap and sleazy novels, but they're in a hardback version, so you're like,
isn't that the only hat?
Like, you think that's kind of classy.
Did it come back?
It must have come out in a hardback at first, but that feels like a bit much.
Okay. I occasionally go to the secondhand bookstore to sell old books, and they actually prefer the paperbacks, because people don't love how heavy the hardbacks are now.
Yeah.
So they'll actually go
for the paperbacks. Well, in fact, we have a solution to when books are too big, but I guess we're running out of time.
Yeah, I've run out of time.
Okay.
Book you went murderer. On and on about the revolution.
Yeah.
The woman, I don't, have you seen the show Fleabag?
Yes.
The woman that won the award at the SAG Award explains what the makeup artist had to do to her.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Right back. Brought to you by State Roofing. When you think of our show, you think of State Roofing. 989-973, State Roofing. I'm out of roof, Tom. What do you got?
A manhole cover?
That's right. That's what I shot. State Roofing, 989-973. Come through the other door as well. That's mynorthwest.com door. You are all welcome there. We do love to hear from you. You are the big part of the show. In fact, we give you 8 minutes at the end of the show, and then you got to just fill it with all of your critiques, criticisms, and witty comebacks. There we go. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who I don't know the name, but I saw the show once when my sister-in-law told me, oh, you might enjoy this. And it was called Fleabag.
Fleabag.
And it was the dirtiest show I think I've ever watched on television, with my sister-in-law sitting next to me on the couch. And even she's like, oh, God, I forgot how dirty the first season was.
It's all the rage, though.
It's not as dirty as it. They got dirty the first season, kind of.
Right. Second season, they introduced the hot priest.
Okay.
And that's what's winning all the awards. It swept the Golden Globe Awards, and then last night, or this past weekend, the Screen Actors Guild
Awards. She wins
an
award.
With all the chaos of the outfits and the interviews and the six-pack that my makeup artist drew on me this evening, and and all the kind of pre-drinks and after-parties and all the amazing Hollywood-y things that happen here, it's quite easy to be distracted from the thing that has actually happened to us. And at some point it will all hit me, and I'll just go into a corner and have a good old cry about it.
I tell you something, she is a fascinating person to watch on camera, because she's not exactly a head-turner, but man, she has a relationship with the camera, because they play off that really well.
Yeah.
She turns, breaks the fourth wall, talks to you.
Uh-huh. This starts off, I don't know if she started off as a stand-up comic, but she was like a one-woman monologue on stage, like a 45-minute bit, and then she's turned into this, she's a producer of Killing Eve.
Yeah.
She's the writer and star now of this Fleabag, which is unbelievably popular. Yeah, she's really quite something. She's the reason she's talking about all these Hollywoody things. They're British, so they're all about to go now that the award season is sort of over for her because she's TV, so she doesn't is not involved in the Oscars. They're flying all back, and she just talks about what an amazing trip this was, and she'll end up crying in her bathroom with
why
tears
did she get a
joy.
Laugh when they talked about the fact that her makeup artist had drew on?
Because
did she have a halter top.
She has a mesh on. You can't really tell. So I just thought it was a kind of a joke, but she's also pulling back the curtain, which is sort of what she does with her show and her personality. She's sort of showing things, and it turns out that a lot of people, the red carpet is where people have makeup artists give them cleavage, the colletage, the six pack abs and all that. And we thought, how ridiculous that people really do this. And then in our pre-show meeting, we find out that you've had this done yourself.
I had to have it done, Tom.
Artistic reasons,
I was on the set of Baywatch in Hawaii.
Of course you were. You were 17 years old trying to break into the business.
No, we went down there for Evening Magazine to do a story on the fact that Baywatch was the most successful, cheapest show ever produced for television. That NBC used to make the slow motion scenes slower so that they could fill the time.
Oh, that's why they were slow motion.
Well, they stole the idea from the Olympics. NBC executives said they used to like to watch how people ran the 100-meter dash.
Yeah.
And then they said, hey, let's slow down and have them run it on the beach.
Yes.
And often, if they needed to pad the show, they would slow them down even more.
I know, but that's because they had women.
Well, there's David Hasselhoff ran, too.
I know, but the slow motion was to accentuate what do they call them? They call them the jiggle shows or something, I think. So anyway,
they only used about 11 extras. They said that's one where they saved money. Plus, they had such incredible product placement script lines. It would be like, hand me the Nokia phone. I need to make a call on the unbelievable coverage that I get from AT&T. Would be like written into the script. So they made money that way. And then since they only used like 7 or 11 extras, you'd see the guy would drown. And then 5 minutes later, he was the waiter. So if you really watch closely, you're like, wait, that's the cab driver.
Okay.
He's now a brain surgeon?
Okay. Right.
So I got a chance to be an extra, but I was so unbelievably pale that they kept saying, you need to go back to makeup, and they're spraying more and more and more on me. So finally, they said, wow, and even as I walked by the camera, they call it dirtying the lens, I was still too pale. So then they said, we got an idea for you. You're going to be a drowning victim. So they sent me out into the ocean. But prior to that, they had put abs on me.
Yeah, and your confession is you love the way you looked.
Oh, I was hitting on every girl. But I had to hit on all the girls from like 10 feet away.
Right. That's right. Kind of frustrating, Matt.
Like, hey, what's your name? Why are you all the way over there yelling at me?
Get a load of those abs.
Look at those abs. And then the sun melts them.